if thieves come into you, or ravagers by night, how you have been silenced. Do they not steal only enough? If grape gatherers come to you, do they not leave a remnant for you, a gleaning? That's Obadiah chapter 1, verse 5. From the version of Yours Truly from 2003. Our daily scripture for today, little children. And the implication is, of course, thieves wouldn't take everything. In most cases, they can't carry it all, right? They're only going to take the most valuable things that they can conveniently carry away. Or if people came to steal your grapes from your vineyard, they wouldn't be able to take them all, probably, so they'd always leave something. Now, the implication, though, is that there's not going to be anything left. When it says in verse 6, well, as we'll see, but it's not going to be the same as when somebody comes to steal something. It'll be worse. It'll be worse than that. That's the warning that Jehovah gives. He's going to bring Edom. He's talking to Edom. Edom means red, but Edom is the place. It's a Bible land which was the home of Esau, the brother of Jacob, right? And Jacob, Esau was born, and he had red hair when he was born. He was a hairy baby, and that's partly why Edom is red, and Esau means the same thing, I believe. That's why he was called Esau. But when Esau was born, Jacob came out after Esau, but was grabbing onto the heel of Esau, which implied that Jacob would be the one to take the birthright away from Esau. And he did so in a way not unlike stealing. He sort of stole it from him because he tricked him into selling his birthright for a bowl of lentil stew. I believe lentil stew, if it's red lentils, anyway, it's colored red too. Its color is red. So the color red has a lot to do with the story of Esau. And Edom means red, and that was the land where Esau went to live, which was south of the Dead Sea, we believe today. South of the Salt Sea. So it was southeast of Israel. The land that we call Israel nowadays, and that was also called Israel after Israel had come back from Egypt. But so this is a warning to the land of Edom that they are going to have all their things taken away. That's what that prophecy is. It's not to Jehovah's people. It's not a warning to God's people. It's a warning to Esau or Edom. Now, Mr. Flavius Josephus, as we resume our reading of the article, The Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, Part 2, in Chapter 10, Paragraph 9, Josephus wrote of Abram's going down to Egypt, saying, quote, he communicated to them arithmetic and delivered to them the science of astronomy. For before Abram came into Egypt, they were unacquainted with those parts of learning. For that science came from the Chaldeans into Egypt, and from thence to the Greeks also. The Greeks were famous for astronomy, but they, according to this, of the writings of Josephus, from Antiquities of the Jews, by Flavius Josephus, Book 1, Chapter 8, Number 2, tells us that the Greeks got it from Egypt, and that the Egyptians got it from the Chaldeans. But Now, the Chaldeans were the ones among whom, in the city of Ur, Abram had been living prior to moving to Syria and then down to the land of Canaan. But this is very telling here, that Abram taught what he had learned from the Chaldeans or the Mesopotamians who lived in and around that area of what was later called Chaldea. And it was the land where Nebuchadnezzar had come to rule at Babylon also later on. But at this early time of Abram, it was this land between the two rivers, the Tigris and Euphrates River, and the knowledge came from the Chaldeans down to Egypt in the south, and also then north to Greece. And there's a connection between Egypt and Greece in certain elements we see from their mythologies and also from the names of some of their cities. I'm thinking of one of the cities, but I'm not sure if I'm remembering correctly. There's a Thebes, I believe, isn't there, in Greece? Because I think there is, and there's a Thebes in Egypt. So that similarity has to do with the connection between the two civilizations way back to some ancient time. We're not saying exactly how ancient that connection was or when the Greeks got that knowledge, but I don't think the Greeks had that knowledge as far back as Abraham, or Abram, as he's called at this time, before he turned 99 years old or 100 years old, when Isaac was born and his name became Abraham at that time. So, I mean, we know about the Greeks several hundred years before the Common Era, that they had science, right? And things like that. But how much we know about their astronomy and how old that is, we're not really trying to cover that here, but it may well be much more ancient than we actually know. That's the other thing, because a lot of what was known has been lost, right? And is only found by digging, archaeologically speaking, and things like that. And so there may yet be a lot more to discover about the ancient astronomy of the Greeks. We don't need to be too concerned, but this is really interesting. Josephus, who wrote in the first century CE, after Jesus, was writing after Jesus was crucified and resurrected. Josephus lived during that time period and wrote and was a Jewish historian, but he served also as the Romans historian. He worked for the Romans. And I believe he was present at Masada too, at the final stand of the Jews against Rome, if that's even possible. Because he was... Oh yes, that's where the Romans captured him. Was at Masada in 73 CE or sometime around there. When Masada fell, then Josephus was captured by the Romans. He was the only survivor of Masada. And he was the only survivor. And that's a real story in and of itself too. But he, because they all had agreed to kill each other, and the last person was going to kill himself, and somehow Josephus arranged to be the last one, and he didn't kill himself, but he was captured by the Romans. And he became the Roman historian, right? He became the official historian of the Romans, but he was a very important historian for the Bible, as we see there also, in his works of history, such as the one called Antiquities of the Jews. Now, at Exodus 17 and 14, Jehovah tells Moses, quote, write this for a memorial in a book, end quote. And what we're going to talk about is the word for writing, the word that means writing. This particular reference from Exodus 17 and 14 is a reference to writing that in Hebrew is written K, T, or TH, B, if you see the English in brackets. The K is on the right, as Hebrew reads from right to left, then the TH, and then the B on the left. That's the letter Beth on the left there. That's the TH, where it sometimes depends on whether there's a dot in the middle of it. It can be a T or not a T. And the K is written similar to Beth, but doesn't have the extension to the right on the bottom. Okay. Now that word Kathab, or Katab, is a word labeled in Strong's Concordance as number H3789. And you can look it up, and here it is, Strong's number H3789. It matches the Hebrew Kathab, right there, Katab. So it's identified correctly there. A word by us, we identified it correctly in this article that we're reading, the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. A word labeled, I continue reading now, in Strong's Concordance as H3789, which is also its first usage in the Bible. The first time the word writing is used in the Bible. Although Job 13 and 26 may be a parallel reference by Moses to an earlier use of the word. Because Moses wrote the book of Job, it's believed also, in addition to the book of Exodus and the other books of the five first books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy in the Bible. Even earlier, though it may be, the book of Jubilees says in the English translation, in brackets, I don't have the original language, end bracket, that Abraham's father taught him writing. The immediately previous use of the English word writing in the book of Jubilees is in 8:12, at least in the Wesley Center version, where the division of the earth in the days after the deluge among the sons of Noah is found, explaining the name Book of Division, used by the Eastern Orthodox Church for Book of Jubilees, a name referring to what has been part of their Bible canon. In other words, the Book of Jubilees is part of the Bible in the Eastern Orthodox Church. A form of the word as quote-unquote written at 10:14 is where Noah gave, in quotes, gave all that he had written to Shem, his eldest son, for he loved him exceedingly above all his sons. Book of Jubilees 10:14. Now, Book of Jubilees 10:14, here he gave all that he had written, there's the word written, to Shem, his eldest son, for he loved him exceedingly above all his sons. Above all his sons. Book of Jubilees 10:14. On 1,000 years being one day, although we could also look at what happened? There. Here we go. This is also the book of Jubilees, chapter 4. Okay, yeah. We're going to be coming to that. On 1,000 years being one day, Adam's time, for this reason, it's talking about Adam's time. Quote, was it written concerning the tree of knowledge? There's the word written again. Was it written concerning the tree of knowledge? quote, on the day that ye eat thereof, ye shall die. Bold text ours, i.e. the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, from Genesis 2, verses 9 and 17. That's from the book of Jubilees 4 and 30. Was it written concerning the tree of knowledge? On the day that ye eat thereof, ye shall die. Book of Jubilees, chapter 4, verse 30. And he lacked 70 years, it says, verse 30, of 1,000 years. For 1,000, see, Adam lived 930 years. He lacked 70 years of 1,000. 1,000 is 70 years more than 930, which is the age at which Adam died. For it says 1,000 years are as one day in the testimony of the heavens. And that testimony of the heavens is where that word writing is, has been translated as testimony. And therefore, but then it says, wait a minute, in the tables of the heavens is another rendering of it somehow. As we mentioned later in this paragraph that we're reading in the Ark of Urartu. But it says, therefore, was it written concerning the tree of knowledge? So there's the word writing. On the day that ye eat thereof, ye shall die. For this reason, he did not complete the years of this day, for he died during it. So on the day that Adam ate from the fruit, he died. Because one day is 1,000 years, he died on the same day because he didn't live as long as 1,000 years. He lived 930 years. So the prophecy came true. On the day that you eat from it, you will die, as God had told Adam and Eve in the Bible, in Genesis. Let's look at that, Genesis 2 and 9 and 17. There's 9. Jehovah God made to grow out of the ground every tree desirable to one's sight and good for food, and also the tree of life in the middle of the garden and the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. But in verse 17, Genesis says, chapter 2, verse 17, but as for the tree of the knowledge of good and bad, you must not eat from it. For in the day you eat from it, you will positively die. In the day you eat from it. But as it points out in the book of Jubilees, 1,000 years at the time of Adam was one day in terms of the meaning, the greater meaning of it. One day was like 1,000 years. In also, we see in Psalms, we can see that reference echoed in Psalms, where it says, 1,000 years are in your eyes, Jehovah, as but yesterday when it is past. Psalm 90 and verse 4, and as a watch during the night. 1,000 years is like only one day to Jehovah. But also, I believe we're going to find that there's a reference to it in Peter, 2 Peter, the letter of 2 Peter, chapter 3, verse 8. However, let this one fact not be escaping your notice, beloved ones, that one day is with Jehovah as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. So you see that? So Adam died on the same day on which he had eaten from the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. And in our article, we also have, continuing on now, an illustration, a photograph of the Chester Beatty Papyrus, number 12, leaf number 3, the verso, it's called, that side of it. I guess that's the side where you'd find the writing, or there's writing on perhaps both sides, but in some manuscripts anyway, but in this case, this is the verso side, and we see the ancient writing there. I'm thinking it's Greek, yeah, and that's what it says in the caption there too. Greek was written at that time, you see, in only in capital letters, uppercase Greek, in the Bible manuscripts. They didn't write in lowercase at that time, in the Greek language, apparently. Not at all. So at the time this was written, it was always written in these uppercase Greek letters. That is from the Book of Enoch, this papyrus. And it's from the manuscript from the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Library. Ann is spelled A-N-N. In that case, it's 4th century CE. So that's 400 years after the turn of the Common Era, or slightly less. The 4th century is from 300 to 400, or 300 to 399 CE, 4th century. The start of writing is by Jubilees 4 and 30, perhaps earlier than Adam, the expression the heavenly tables or tablets occurring 32 times in all in the Book of Jubilees. Among men born on earth, the same book tells us of Enoch. Verse 17, chapter 4 of Jubilees, he called his name Enoch, and he was the first among men that are born on earth who learnt writing and knowledge and wisdom, and who wrote down the signs of heaven according to the order of their months in a book, that men might know the seasons of the years according to the order of their separate months. And he was the first to write a testimony, and he testified to the sons of men among the generations of the earth, and recounted the weeks of the Jubilees, and made known to them the days of the years, and set in order the months, and recounted the Sabbaths of the years, as we made them known to him. And what was and what will be, he saw in a vision of his sleep, as it will happen to the children of men throughout their generations until the day of judgment. He saw and understood everything, and wrote his testimony, and placed the testimony on earth for all the children of men and for their generations. That's the end of the quote. The Book of Enoch is quoted in the Bible book Jude. Quote, this is from Jude 14 and 15, chapter 1, the only chapter of Jude. Look, Jehovah came with his holy myriads to execute judgment against all, and to convict all the ungodly concerning all their ungodly deeds that they did in an ungodly way, and concerning all the shocking things that ungodly sinners spoke against him. End quote. But Jude had been quoting from Enoch 1 and 9. And we are not. Well, here's a reference. Here's a link. I don't know if it works. Yeah, there it is. There's the link to the Book of Enoch, chapter 1, verse 9. And behold, he cometh with 10,000s, or myriads, in other words, 10,000s of his holy ones to execute judgment upon all, and to destroy all the ungodly, and to convict all flesh of all the works of their ungodliness which they have ungodly committed, and of all the hard things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him, meaning against God, Jehovah. That's from the Book of Enoch directly that time, from the website Sacred Texts, sacred-texts.com. So, I don't know what I did here. Yeah, let's see. We've finished our study. Well, we've used most of our time, too. I've got another infection, a throat infection, so I'm still... I had to take more vitamin C. I'm downloading a piece of music here. Continue playback. Let's see. Here it is. Yeah, so I've taken 24 grams, I think, already of vitamin C ascorbate, the ascorbate powder. There's no calcium in it, it's just ascorbate, just the pure vitamin C. And, you know, I'm getting better at taking it, too. You put a very small amount of water with the powder, just enough so you can get the straw to be able to extract it from the glass, you know. And so I'm not really sad. I'm more like puzzled as to why I'm still getting strep throat. But there could be strep throat that because I'm taking new vitamins right now, vitamin MK4, for example, in larger quantities than I used to be. I'm thinking that, you know, there's something that could be happening with the, you know, but I also think that I haven't probably cleaned my humidifier well enough. So I'm doing some more cleaning of that, and it worked the first time I cleaned it, apparently, but maybe I have to clean it with vinegar every day or something. I don't know. I have to be sure that I do it better than what I've been doing, but I'm also going to be changing. Like, I've emptied out all my garbage cans that could have anything in it that might be strep in there, you know. I've changed all the bed linens that I thought I should, but I also probably have to air out my sleeping bag or whatever, you know, make sure that everything, and get fresh air in the room. I can also run fresh air into the room all night long if I want, but I need to do something because I think it's happening at night, and I need to do more things to eliminate all the bacteria that I can from everything, just to make sure that that's not causing it. And but the strep, you know, it came back again, and it takes, like I said, 20 or 25 grams to get rid of. I think I've beaten it now, but yeah, it's very tough. You know, it's a tough one to beat. Strep is very tough to beat, and so that was the song, instrumental, by yours truly. It's called Enosh. Enosh was the son of Seth. He's the grandson of Adam. Not the same as Enoch. But this was the third raw take of April 27th, 2011, Mix B. Mix B meaning I mixed it in more than one way. And that's our study. And talking about the strep throat, it's a really serious infection, right? If it takes 20 or 25 grams of vitamin C to fight it off, it's serious. But there are worse infections than strep. It's a bad one. So, it's hard to say. You can get strep from food too. You can get it from food. You can get it from different, if it's spoiled food or something like that. Oh yeah, I'm drinking milk that's been expired. It's just that it's not tasting expired. So I'm assuming it doesn't have any bacteria in it, but maybe it does. So I can't use that milk, I guess, anymore. That's another thing. Yep, and I'm not sure what the incubation period is for strep. So I don't know, you know, I got it early in the, or maybe I noticed it about sort of 8 o'clock in the morning or something. Or maybe even earlier, but I took my first slow-release vitamin C at about 8 because I noticed my throat was getting a little sore, just a tiny bit. It comes on slowly, but it's only strep that you can't eliminate by taking, you know, 4 grams or something like that. I mean, or 6 or 8 grams. Anything would be gone if it's not, you know, a serious thing like strep. If it's something like a cold, you know, you can get rid of that with a lot less than 20 grams of vitamin C. And if it's a child wouldn't need 20 grams if they're small. They wouldn't need 20 grams for strep probably, but we're all different, I would guess. But it's more important for me to get rid of it because I can't afford to be ill for like a week or 2 weeks. I'm not sure, maybe I'm not getting rid of it enough and it's coming back again, right? Maybe it's just the same infection coming back. So I need to, there's more to learn. But I think once you beat it, it's got to be reinfected. It won't come back. But if it's coming out of my bones as a healing crisis because I'm taking new vitamins, then I might get strep several times until all the strep is exhausted from my bones or wherever it's being stored in my body prior to taking these new vitamins. So, yeah, there could be a lot of reasons why it's happening. But I did find strep in the humidifier, though. The color of pink or purple indicates strep, so I think that's what's causing it. I'll be cleaning that a lot more thoroughly from now on. But the first night I cleaned it, it worked. But that's it for today's study. The second night, apparently not so much. I didn't clean it the second night. I just dried it out. But I'll be doing better, hopefully, December 27th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 18:08 hours. Now 18:09 hours, Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching. And once again, I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Sissy and this is Star. Saying bye for now. And, you know, Cassie's here, too. Here's Cassie. I just am not wearing Cassie, but Cassie doesn't need to be looked at because she's electronic. That was 10-9, the Ark of Urartu.